I have been attending Good Friday services since I was 10 years old. Good Friday has always been at the heart of my faith. I remember going to the Catholic church of my childhood. I would get there at noon or close to it, since my mother was never on time to any place. She would drop me off, and I would stay the full 3 hours. And I remember a few times locking my knees and even fainting, and it was all part of a great mystery for me. I never understood why I loved Good Friday. And my mother certainly never understood why her daughter loved Good Friday. She thought it was morbid to spend time thinking about our death, about Christ's death, to focus on suffering. And I never really understood either. But this week, as I was preparing for this service, I read an article by Barbara Brown Taylor, who is one of my heroes of the faith. She wrote this about 13 years ago, and I was drawn to it because we share some things in common. She loves museums, and I love museums. And when she would go to a museum, she always ended up at the end in the gift shop and would pick things up. And this is her story that brought new insight to me. She says, as I was leaving the High Museum of Art in Atlanta, I was standing in line at the cash register with a box of Van Gogh note cards in my hand when I saw a clear glass bowl full of smooth silver stones on the counter. Each was about as big as my thumb, with one word etched into the surface. Even without touching them, I could see that one said, hope. And another said, love. So did mine. Barbara had a recently widowed friend who could use some pebbles like that, so she sank her hand into the bowl to see what else might be fished up. Tears, said the next pebble. Loss, said the next. Well, I thought my friend already has enough of those, so I put them back and kept fishing. I found a couple of gratitudes, along with a few more hopes and loves, but only by looking hard. Over and over, I brought up whole handfuls of tears and loss, which outnumbered the other pebbles by at least 20 to 1. Everyone had enough of those, apparently, or wanted nothing to do with them. Why pay good money for something that life pelts you with for free? I discovered one forgiveness in the bottom of the bowl, which told me that that had been the best seller, pushing all the other pebbles aside. I plucked it up and laid it on the counter with hope, love, and gratitude. Then I looked back at all the tears and loss left in the bowl and thought maybe that was part of the problem, that no one wanted to own them. So I chose one of each and added them to my collection. I felt almost cruel giving them to my friend, but her sad mouth softened when she saw them. She may not have wanted them, but she knew they were hers, and seeing them in my hand with all the others told her story better than the edited version I had had in mind. Tears belonged next to love and hope, took on more luster when nestled against loss. Gratitude was no longer a platitude, and forgiveness was something major to forgive. Holding all the pebbles together in one hand turned out to be exactly what she needed. When Christians talk about the church and what it has to offer the world, one thing we do not often mention is an adequate theology of failure. Like everyone else, we live in a culture that adores success and that never seems to tire of raising the bar. Being a successful human means making straight A's, keeping a well-paid job with good benefits, staying happily married to an attractive person, raising well-adjusted children, and not gaining too much weight. Judging from the commercials on television, being successful also means driving a hot car, carrying a cool cell phone, having young-looking skin, and choosing the right medicine to beat depression for good. This leaves a lot of room to fail. But the same culture that creates these conditions for failure is not equipped to deal with it. The most readily available therapy comes in the form of reality shows, where we may gawk at those who hunger for success, but who ultimately fail, and fail spectacularly, right where we can see them. Better for the losers to show up on the television screen than in the mirror. At church, the loser shows up right above the altar. If success was ever on his list of things to do, then it was not the kind that anyone around him had much use for. Once in the presence of a large crowd, he blessed the poor in spirit, the mournful, the hungry, the reviled. Some of the people who fell into those categories no doubt wished he had done something to improve their condition instead of saying grace over them. But I am guessing that there were others who were vastly relieved to hear that there was nothing deeply wrong with them. If Jesus was right, then they did not have to leave their tears and losses in the bowl. They could hold all of their pebbles together in one hand. Barbara says she goes to church to remember this. And when I read that, I knew why I went to church on Good Friday as a child. I went to church to meet that God who didn't just reign in heaven on a throne, but who came to live among us. And I remembered that before I was 10 and started going to Good Friday services, I was 7. And my sister was born. And 6 weeks later, my mother was back in the hospital with polio and meningitis. And I was living with my mother's mother during the week with my brother and moving to my father's parents' home on the weekends. That after school, I went home with a friend whose family didn't let me into the house, but let me sit on their back porch until my father came at 6. I remembered feeling alone and lost and bewildered. There were things that were not talked about in that time. They did not tell me where my mother was. They did not want to bother a child with the details. They did not tell me where my grandfather was. Eventually, I learned that he had had a heart attack and was in the hospital. I look back now and I laugh because that wasn't the full story. Of course, he had a heart attack, but he was in rehab for alcohol. So he wasn't home either. My life was a mess. I remember standing up for children who were teased and bullied and being told to mind my own business. I remember making plans for how I would take care of the family when my mother was gone. But when I went to church on Good Friday, I heard about a Savior who didn't have a place to lay his head, a Savior who struggled in life, who when he spoke up was shut down, a Savior who was spat on and rejected and reviled, a Savior who knew what it was to suffer. On Good Friday, I met a God who knew me, who heard me, who understood what it is to cry out in pain. Like Barbara Brown Taylor, I have a collection of rocks. But I learned this week that I'm missing some. All of mine give comfort and peace and hope. But in my life, I've needed someone to cry with me. I've needed someone just like Jesus. And I've learned that that's the story that we need to tell each other. Not that we are perfect, not that we are comfortable, but that we are beloved. I've learned that if we don't tell that story to the world, even the rocks cry out.